Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thank you for sharing part of your day with me. Hey, the ticker tape parade for the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team just wrapped in the Canyon of Heroes. Megan Rapinoe, Carly Lloyd, Alex Morgan, and their teammates, and thousands of their closest friends, celebrated the team's second consecutive World Cup title. And the win all but assures the continued conversation about equal pay in sports that began when the women's soccer team filed a gender discrimination lawsuit against the U.S. Soccer Federation right before the start of the World Cup.
I think I'll just end with this. This is my charge to everyone. We have to be better. We have to love more, hate less. We got to listen more and talk less. We got to know that this is everybody's responsibility. Every single person here. Every single person who's not here. Every single person who doesn't want to be here. Every single person who agrees and doesn't agree. It's our responsibility to make this world a better place. I think this team does an incredible job of taking that on our shoulders and understanding the position that we have and the platform that we have within this world. Yes, we play sports. Yes, we play soccer. Yes, we're female athletes, but we're so much more than that. You're so much more than that. You're more than a fan. You're more than someone who just supports sports. You're more than someone who tunes in every 4 years. You're someone who walks these streets every single day. You interact with your community every single day. How do you make your community better? How do you make the people around you better? Your family, your closest friends, the 10 closest people to you, the 20 closest people to you, the most 100 closest people to you. It's every single person's responsibility. There's been so much contention in these last years. I've been a victim of that. I've been a perpetrator of that. With our fight with the Federation, sorry for some of the things I said. Not all of the things. But it's time to come together. This conversation is at the next step. We have to collaborate. It takes everybody. This is my charge to everybody. Do what you can. Do what you have to do. Step outside yourself. Be more. Be better, be bigger than you've ever been before. If this team is any representation of what you can be when you do that, please take this as an example. This group is incredible. We took so much on our shoulders to be here today, to celebrate with you today. And we did it with a smile. So do the same for us. Please, I ask you.
That was Megan Rapinoe from earlier today. So the team's subsequent victory and outspoken advocacy for equity has put the conversation surrounding the wage disparity in sports back to the forefront of the national conversation. And this fight is still playing out in another sport, women's tennis. Here to tell us what women's soccer could maybe learn from some of the successful fights for pay equity in tennis, as well as to give us a preview of what to look forward to the rest of Wimbledon, is co-founder of Racquet Magazine, Caitlin Thompson. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Allison. Thanks for having me.
So I want to get to how in 2007, Wimbledon finally established equal prize money. Tell me about how this happened.
It was very interesting. And, you know, it's really appropriate to hear from a pioneer and somebody really outspoken coming into this segment, obviously, with Megan Rapinoe. It took Venus Williams, essentially. It took Venus Williams on the back of Chris Evert, on the back of notably Billie Jean King in the tennis context, penning a letter in 2006 to the Times of London, basically saying, you are not valuing our pay. She had won the title a number of times, most recently in 2000, prior to writing that letter. And basically, the House of Commons got a hold of this thing. Tony Blair read it. And they put the fire under the feet of the All England Club and said, hey, listen, why are women getting paid substantially less? The ratings, the money, the joint events do so much better across the board. And Wimbledon, to their credit, stepped up. But actually, interestingly, we have a cover story in this quarter's issue of Racquet that sort of picks a little bit of a battle with Wimbledon, because truly, truly, it was not until this year that full pay equity was established. Because if you look at the entire purse for all competitors across each of the events, the qualifying draw on the women's side was about half the size of the men's. So actually, this year, technically, there was a discrepancy of about £220,000 coming into this year that has finally been rectified. So finally, truly, all the competitors are getting paid equally. This is true at the slams, but it's still not true across all the tournaments.
So that's interesting. So the evolution of it was this letter that was written and then got to political power.
Yes.
Political powers that could be, that then in turn put pressure.
Yes.
Was that the root? Am I describing that correctly?
Completely right. And I think, you know, if we're looking to link these two sports, they've been linked before. We had an interview actually with Billie Jean King a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, I looked her in the face and asked her what it took to sort of establish not only the original sort of tennis circuit, she along with the original nine did so in the 70s, basically by going on strike and making their own sort of independent league. Julie Foudy called Billie Jean King, and she's a name people might remember if they watched a lot of World Cup soccer in the 90s. She was one of the 99ers. She called Billie Jean King and asked her how to establish support for a women's soccer league domestically, coming off of the great success of their international appearances. And basically, Billie Jean King said two things, both of which still apply. Number one, go outside the sport, get political support, which is exactly what you just mentioned. And number two, go to your own sponsors and get the money, because the money talks. Hmm. And Billie Jean King is a pragmatist, and she's somebody who I think really mentored Venus when Venus was writing this letter, knowing that she would get outside pressure to sort of come back into the sport and say, hey, this is unacceptable. We can do something about it, and we will.
So I'm interested, you talked about the women who are supporting this. How are the male players reacting to this pay equity issue?
It's a good question. The one that all of the women love with unrepentant enthusiasm is Andy Murray, who has spoken across the board. He has a famous mother coach. He hires women to be his coaches.
He also will often correct journalists and press conferences about the way they talk about female athletes.
He was asked what it felt like to be the only tennis player to win two gold medals. And without missing a beat, he said, I believe Venus and Serena have about four each. So he's beloved among the women. Federer also supports equal pay. Not terribly surprisingly, Rafael Nadal does not. He's made a lot of comments saying, well, it's just about the audience and female models get paid a lot more than male models and men should be paid more than women. But the real... I don't know.
Asterisk that he went to models.
Models is a very strange example.
Say that.
With respect, Rafael Nadal is not known as the sort of intellectual of the tour. But actually, one of the things that's happening right now, and, you know, I look at tennis as being this place as where a lot of pioneering has gone on. Obviously, we've had some of the first athletes of color to really get success on the huge stage. We had trans athletes, Renee Richards in the 70s, the gay and lesbian sort of community, myself among them, you know, had some huge strides in visibility happen in the 80s. But there's a bit of a regressive conversation happening right now, even as we've been talking about how great it is that Venus Williams and others have fought for equal pay. Novak Djokovic is leading the charge to basically pull the men out in front of the women yet again. And it's happening behind closed doors and what's called the ATP, which is the men's tour, ATP Players Council. There's even a villain. His name is Justin Gimelstob. He's sort of a disgraced broadcaster, a mediocre tennis talent, but kind of the smartest guy in the room. He's been urging the men to ask for more and basically go on strike, basically in protest of the fact that women have managed to get equal pay across a lot of the major tennis tournaments. So it's something that a lot of us within the sport are watching because it's so... You know, it's Faustian. It's like, well, this guy is such a villain.
He's a mustache twirler.
And then you've got Novak Djokovic, the number one player in the world, who has two children, one of whom is a daughter. But you'd think he would be, you know, potentially somebody who would be on board with the 21st century, but he's not. So
why is that to their benefit?
The incremental more amounts of millions of dollars that they might make.
So it's more, they see it as
a pie.
A piece. There's only this much pie.
Right.
Okay.
I would argue it's not a zero-sum game.
Yeah.
We've seen the joint events and how much they benefit the sport altogether. You know, ratings for this week's Wimbledon, Coco Gauff had by several orders of magnitude the highest ratings. Mixed events do the best. And if you look at in this particular week, at Wimbledon, we had Andy Murray and Serena Williams. I went to their debut match. There were lines out the door. People were fighting each other to get in, which doesn't actually happen that much at Wimbledon. So you see, this is one of the few sports that you can see men and women competing on the same stage, sometimes even on the same space. And it seems a real shame to sort of recreate gender imbalance when it's been so hard fought over the years.
So those combined tournaments, does that seem to be the answer that people are pointing towards? Like, this is one way to go about it?
Well, Allison, I love this question because it gives me the chance to sort of pretend a world where I run tennis.
Okay.
And the first thing I do is join the tours. I create one tour. I make every tour event joint. And I give the men and women equal pay. And I also make them play the same amount of tennis. And I make them play doubles and I make them play mixed. And I make them bring their daughters.
Because that was one of the arguments. I heard that in there. They play the same amount of time.
Yes. The truth is, five-set tennis matches are quite boring. They're very long. And they come from an era in which everyone was playing on grass with wooden rackets. So they'd last about a whisper. Now they're interminable. And the truth is, if entertainment-wise, a three-set match often is more of a sort of imagination capture than a very languishing five sets. Or you have the opposite, like today when Novak Djokovic had a routine three-set victory over some chump. And, you know, it's over in a blink of an eye. And the mixed doubles match that's happening four courts away is lasting longer. So, you know, if that's the measure, let's take another look at what's the sort of best for the sport. I would argue it's not.
That is Caitlin. Caitlin ruled the tennis world.
That's right.
My guest is Caitlin Thompson. She's the co-founder of Racquet Magazine. All right, let's talk about Wimbledon. We talked about the pay equity and what soccer could learn from tennis and what tennis still has work to do. But let's Coco Gauff.
Yeah.
For people who don't know who she is, tell us a little bit about her and why we all were paying so much attention to her.
It was amazing to watch. Coco Gauff is a 15-year-old. She's the youngest main draw entrant in a Grand Slam ever. And she's a junior champion. So usually if you're privileged enough to get to go to one of these Grand Slams, you'll see the girls and boys version, which tend to last a couple of days. They're the best juniors in the world. Usually they're about 17 or 18. And you can kind of watch among these kids to see one or two who's going to make it and actually be sort of a stalwart on the pro tour. It doesn't happen very often. The transfer is not one-to-one. Coco Gauff at 14 last year won the French Open where I first saw her. And I stumbled onto her court thinking that I was watching a pro match. And I was like, why are they playing on these outdoor courts?
Oh, funny.
Oh my God, this kid's 14. She's about 5'11". She's got poised for days. She's from Florida. And she's got a Florida-Atlanta connection. Her parents were both collegiate athletes. And they are giving rise to this young lady who's got poise, game, and, you know, really, truly a depth and variety to her game that we don't usually see. So not to get too technical about tennis, but she's really a tennis phenom in a way that those of us who know the sport very well are surprised to see developed at such a young age. So this is not a fluke. She's here to stay.
What is it about her game that allowed her to get to where she got to defeating Venus Williams?
Yeah, Venus Williams, that first round match was pretty profound as a display, because what we see when we look at phenoms a lot of times, they'll have one particularly big stroke. Maybe they have huge ground strokes, but they don't have a ton of complexity and they can't really problem solve very well. I watched her beat Venus Williams pretty convincingly with kind of power for power, which Venus Williams is also a power hitter, and Coco Gauff hit her off the court. And I thought, okay, this kid's got power. Then I watched her play an extremely nervy sort of technical match in which she had to sort of deploy a lot of slices and tactical shifts. She wasn't winning easily, was down a set and two breaks to a Slovenian woman named Polona Herzog on center court. Surely a moment where most of us would wilt, where most pros would wilt. And this girl found an extra gear, dug deep, changed her tactics, and sort of thought her way through a match. When we look at phenoms, oftentimes we look at their skill sets, but we don't necessarily think about their mental acuity. This showed me she's a real sort of thinker out there in addition to being a ball basher. And that's what makes me excited. Now, because she's 15, she can only play 7 more events for the rest of the year because there's a few age limitations. So it'll be really interesting to see which ones she sort of picks and how she kind of manages her coming out party, because you want, obviously, this sort of early spark to really last, because I think she has a huge future ahead of her.
What you described to me sounded like maturity.
Yeah, maturity is a better word for my long rambling answer, but essentially it's exciting to see.
All right, let's talk about the men. Djokovic, Nadal, Federer. Who do you think is going to take the tournament?
They
just take turns at the top.
They just take turns at the top. You know, it's interesting. I'm rooting against every single one of them, not out of any kind of spite, but just because I'm ready to see somebody else's post-tournament celebration.
Yeah.
You know, there's usually a variety of falling to your knees, and then the Djokovic sort of throws his heart to the crowd in a way that's sort of cringeworthy. You can tell I love him the most, can't you? If Federer is going to have a shot at a 21st title, this is the time to do it. I don't think anybody's going to stop Djokovic. I think Nadal and Federer will likely play each other on Friday. I think they're going to poop themselves out, and Novak Djokovic is going to have a cakewalk to the final. That's not why hope happens, but certainly, but I think it probably is what will happen.
Is there a male player who is like Coco Gauff or Naomi Osaka who just, if one of these guys would had gotten injured, would have broken through?
There's two of them. One that I'm watching with great enthusiasm is a Greek player named Stefanos Tsitsipas, who's got a beautiful one-handed backhand. He kind of looks like, this is a weird reference, but Yves Saint Laurent when he was nude doing self-portraits with the glasses and the kind of long hair. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do.
Right? You're a cultured lady. that's sort of his vibe and look, and he's sort of a breath of fresh air because he's long and elegant and plays really beautiful sort of Federer-esque points, but he's got a whole game. And then there's this kind of jughead-looking guy from Austria named Dominic Thiem, who made two consecutive Roland Garros finals, losing in both to Rafael Nadal. But he's got the whole complexity of the game, the tactics, and they both have beautiful one-handed backhands, which is something I like very much. So there's a generation waiting to sort of take over. The middle generation, sort of the 25 to 30-year-olds, is kind of seen as a great failure who never displaced any of the top three. But if you go younger than them, the ones that are sort of 20, 21, 22, these guys are sort of poised. And then, of course, we didn't talk about, but I love deeply, is Nick Kyrgios. Do you have any sort of thoughts about him?
Just, I do not.
He is a...
Except the name is great.
The name is great. He's a Maltese, Cypriot, Greek, Australian. And he is the bad boy of tennis. He's the enfant terrible. He doesn't care a lot of the time. He hit Rafael Nadal square in the chest on purpose.
I remember. Okay,
yeah,
yes.
Now it's ringing the bell, right?
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, everyone hates him, but he sort of jaws at the umpires in between. Uh-huh. He gets in fights with spectators on the regular. And he's our sort of, he's akin to a Charles Barkley or to maybe a John McEnroe. Not quite with the results yet, but he's the most exciting tennis player out there because he's got talent for days. And if he cared a lot, he doesn't train. He famously doesn't have a coach. I saw him out at Wimbledon Village, two girls on his arm, both professional tennis players, drunk as a skunk. And, you know, he's playing the next day in mixed doubles and doesn't care. So, but you know what? I relate to him, and I think he's a head case, and he's fun, and he's bringing a whole sort of young vibe to the tennis crowd. The ratings for his Nadal match were, again, through the roof. Not quite as high as Coco's, but the second highest match was these two in a second round because everyone knows that Kyrgios is kind of going to bring the... He's going to bring the Kyrgios to the court for whatever that means. So there are a few guys who could really sort of get it together once the big three retire or get bored or whatever it is they're going to do in their next lives.
My guest is Caitlin Thompson, co-founder of Racquet Magazine. I can't let you leave until we talk about Serena.
Got to talk about Serena.
She going to go all the way?
You know, I would have totally deflated your sales about 2 weeks ago had I not seen her in person. I'm going to say this very thoughtfully because I really do deeply respect Serena. The Serena Williams experience can be a lot for those of us within the tennis space. She has, in the last year and a half since having a child, and to her credit, winning a Grand Slam with a child in utero, which will never happen again. Which is, in and of itself, its own greatest
accomplishment. Or it will because she's an inspiration to someone.
Maybe so. She's got 23 Grand Slams, which is already breaking the record for the most ever, whatever anyone wants to say about Margaret Court. She's the greatest of all time. However, her game has not matched up to the hype in the last 18 months or so. It's been very hard for her to stay fit. You know, you turn on the TV and you get 18, you know, Serena Williams commercials in a row. And then what you see on the court is her being frustrated and a little bit injured or something's happening. And it's not ideal. I'm here to tell
parenting
you.
Parenting is hard.
Yes. Parenting is not easy. I know. I was asking my wife, how soon after you gave birth to our son would you be ready to go back on the basketball court? And I was like, 4 months, 5 months? She was like, years? What are you even talking
about?
She's
like, go stand in the yard and come back in an hour.
Talk to me when you have something reasonable to say out of your mouth. But anyway, having seen her both play singles, moving well, serving well, solving problems well, in a pretty tough draw that called her quarter of the draw at Wimbledon the quarter of death, because it had a bunch of former Grand Slam winners, Kerber, Muguruza, Azarenka among them. She came through. She's going to win this thing. And I don't make predictions, nor do I tend to get my hopes up too much, but I also think her playing with Andy Murray gave her a ton of energy, positivity, a little bit more spark. She's here to do it. I could not be happier for her if she gets it. You know, and honestly, I wouldn't be surprised to see her retire afterwards. I think she's got a lot of things she wants to do in the world. And obviously, she's the mother of a beautiful little kid. But I'm really, really excited because this is the best Serena's looked, honestly, since she's been back from maternity leave.
Have you gotten a chance to read her Harper's Bazaar?
Yes, I did.
So she's on the cover of Harper's Bazaar in a, God bless her, in a spread which has not been retouched.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
She doesn't need it.
And I know, she looks amazing. Yeah. And she's really candid about some of the difficulties she's faced, a lot of the junk people have thrown at her.
Oh, sure.
Was there a standout from that article that you thought, that maybe you didn't even really know about her, that was like, wow?
Yeah. I didn't realize she had written to Naomi Osaka after the U.S. Open. And for anybody who doesn't know, obviously it was a very contentious U.S. Open. Serena had a couple of point penalties, the first of which probably should not have been assessed, which she got a violation for coaching. Her coach is a real piece of work, and he shouldn't have been saying anything to her. She didn't even see it, but things escalated from there. She gets a game taken from her, kind of loses her cool, and the whole thing ended up overshadowing Naomi Osaka's debut Grand Slam. So learning that she had written to Naomi and apologized was really cool, because she didn't need to do it. And I think Serena, for better or worse, is a competitor with absolute fire. She's somebody who really doesn't want to give you an inch. And I think sometimes that can even translate into being a bit of a bad sport. She wants to win so badly. And I won't defend all of her actions on the court, despite the fact that she's completely right when she says she's been overwhelmingly,
victimized, penalized,
called out about her body, about her voice, about her hair. You know, there were the amount of outrage over braids that her and her sister wore and the beads that were in them, you know, in the late 90s was just racism. It was absolute pure racism with, you know, a light sprinkling of misogyny, you know, for good measure. So they really, she's not wrong. She has had to deal with an amazing amount of garbage from the tennis world and beyond, much of which we haven't even seen. That said, she can be a bad sport sometimes. It's true. Both of those things can be true about her. And I loved the fact that she, in her sort of later years, was realizing the importance of sort of being, not for our sake, ours in the greater public, ours in the tennis viewing public, maybe even ours in the media, but just for our sake, as for her sake as a sort of steward of the game and somebody who wanted to help support another woman of color who was young and coming up, that felt really important. Like Serena was sort of shifting into this gear that she didn't necessarily need to get to, which is sort of being a steward and a role model in a way that mentors other young women who are playing tennis. And I think that to me was the what I learned and was the most exciting to read.
Yeah, that she was gracious.
She took it seriously.
Yeah.
That idea.
My guest has been Caitlin Thompson, co-founder of Racquet Magazine. Caitlin, thanks for coming to the studio.
Thank you.
Have you seen those scooters that are all over Brooklyn? We'll tell you why, and we'll get to the pros and cons after a break. Stay with us. This is All of It.